Greetings, everybody. This is Tabitha. Welcome to another edition of White Wellness. Today, October 27th, 2022, broadcasting out of New York for White Wellness Radio. That song right there, The Ramones, I Want to Be Sedated, 1978. And I played that song because I think it relates somewhat to the cult of neoteny, or to neoteny in general, to perpetual adolescence, arrested development, a lot of ways to say this. So that's going to be the topic of the broadcast for today. But first, the word of the week, or the word of every 2 weeks. And that word today is besom. B-E-S-O-M. Besom. From the Anglo-Saxon besema, bundle of twigs, this word became broomstick. A medieval couple was considered legally married if they jumped over a besom placed on their doorstep, a custom that survived into modern times as a ritual of carrying the bride across the threshold. Divorce could occur just as easily if one member of the couple replaced the broom and jumped back. To hang out the besom meant to have a fling while one's wife was away. Little bit of lore and history right there regarding the broomstick and that whole ritual of jumping over it. I guess this is kind of the origins of it. And when I think of this word, it kind of almost sounds like bosom, right? Like breasts. And also it kind of sounds similar to the Spanish word for kiss, beso. But anyway, that is the word of the week. So before we get into the main topic of the broadcast, talking about neoteny, I wanted to first relay a little bit of story time. I went to Manhattan. I think it was not last weekend, the week prior. And it had been my first time into the city since Oyed AI. So that's quite some time. I think before that it had been maybe summer of 19 or some maybe fall of 19. And then of course Oyed AI and now this. So that's a long stretch. So I observed many a things whilst I was there. It's still the city for anyone who's familiar with it on any level, whether you live there, whether you've visited there, whether you've read about it, seen about it in movies, whether you used to live there or in vicinity of it. It's still what it always was, a city. And it's a dirtier city than most. If that's the first city you've ever been to in your life, you're going to think all cities are like that. But there's many a cities that are far cleaner, in my opinion, The ones in California, the major ones like San Francisco and Los Angeles, are far cleaner than Manhattan. Manhattan is really dirty. So it just seemed like it was more degenerate than it usually is. And I think overall, I've always kind of accepted this certain, I don't know, layer of degeneracy in Manhattan. And I guess it just kind of goes along with the structure of the city or that city in general. So it's not super surprising that any of this would be happening because it's a city and it's urban and it's always been multiracial and that's just the way it is. It's becoming perpetually more like that as time goes on. Of course, 100 years ago, the racial layout of Manhattan was very different than it is today. So some things I observed whilst I was there, a lot of it was very visceral. I will say that maybe for people who aren't aware of city living and seeing it firsthand, it might be a bit intense for them. For me, not so much. But here are some things I noticed. I noticed a lot of what appeared to be young millennials and Zoomers, a lot of homosexuals and a lot of lesbians, not even looking stereotypically like we would think, you know, a homosexual or a lesbian would look, seeing a lot of that, especially a lot of young women together. Maybe it's to escape the fear of being with a man. Maybe it's because a man was violent to them. Maybe it's because, you know, they grew up being abused. So, you know, childhood violence. But I saw an awful lot of that. I think for maybe some women, a woman feels safer. I saw some kind of, I guess, I don't really like the word gender, but, you know, that kind of that gender bending kind of weird liminal androgynous type of stuff. So there was some of that going on. But, you know, that's been a facet of the city for a long time. I remember seeing otogynephiles in the city in the 90s. So, you know, not really like a new thing. I didn't notice that many masks, so that was heartening. Some people were wearing them. There wasn't really too much of a demographic that was wearing them more than others. Maybe Asians by a hair, but I think that's just the way it is in general. They've been through all the other psyops of the bird flu and H1N1 and all of that. I saw a ton of race mixing. A ton, like literally a ton. It was everywhere. And it was, again, mostly younger people, younger millennials, millennials born in the 90s, and then the Zoomer generation. But the amount of race mixing was pretty shocking. I saw every possible combination you could think of race mixed. So that's a big thing. I also saw more young people who looked mixed themselves and then with a mixed person. So then you have to just have like multi-generational miscegenation. I saw quite a few homeless of different races. I saw homeless youth that were black and white. I saw older homeless, some of those black, some of those white, all men seemed to be. Although I did see one homeless woman who was young. She was probably 30-something, and she was an amputee. So that was pretty intense to see, and she wasn't wearing her stump sock. It was one of her legs. So that was pretty intense to see because she was very dirty and covered in dirt. So I haven't seen something like that in the city in a long time. I also saw, and she was white, I also saw a young man probably in his 30s in the stairwell of the subway, and he was looking down, and I'm thinking, oh, this guy's probably like in a heroin stupor, you know, probably in one of those types of things. And then as I walk past him, I notice that he's injecting a syringe into his hand. I'm assuming probably because the veins in his arms have collapsed and he can no longer inject into there. That's typically what happens at a certain level when people are doing a lot of injectable drugs. So that was a visceral moment. The two most intense moments were seeing that gal who was an amputee and then seeing this fellow who was doing the heroin actively saw him doing it. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff that you'd rather not see going on. Also, since now we have ganja legal in, I guess, New York, recreation. I don't even know if it's recreationally legal. I know it's medicinally legal, but that's rather lax. You could always go there under the guise of the back pain. So there's really no rules with ganja. And there are these little trucks selling the ganja, selling the edibles. I wouldn't trust it personally because they can put anything in it and you never know, especially for a plant like cannabis, which likes to kind of uptake a lot of heavy metals. And if you poison it with what you grow it with, it's probably going to do more of that, or it's going to be harder to mitigate those things. So I saw a lot of that. And of course, you know, they want to promote it. Remember, whenever something is legalized, it doesn't mean because it was terrible in the first place. it doesn't mean that it was great in the first place. It means it has mixed messages and mixed use depending on who's using it and why they're using it, and, you know, many types of things with their availability and strain if we're talking about cannabis or other things. And there's always, of course, an agenda to legalize it. It's not because they want people to be completely enlightened by utilizing cannabis, because it's one of the psychedelic drugs. It's a mild psychedelic. They don't want that. They want people to basically be on the couch and melting into the couch and doing like very high type of THC things like the dab and the vape and stuff like that. Plus, there's a lot of heavy metals in that vaporizing coil, and that can cause psychosis in some people. So always remember that things are legalized not because they want you to have a great time and to be healthy. It's because they have an agenda. So I saw these little, like, I don't know, food truck looking things that were selling all types of cannabis. But like I said, I don't know if I would trust it. You really can't trust anything that's being promoted. I think we know that's pretty clear. Or if it's being promoted, don't trust the version or the type that they're promoting to you. So those are my insights when I was in the city. Like I said, a lot of degeneracy. Some of it feels rather familiar. Some of it is a bit shocking and a bit raw. But, you know, seeing those people who had those afflictions with the amputation and with the heroin, and then just seeing the constant race mixing, that was a bit intense, but not necessarily out of step with where the world is right now. There's a lot of sorrow and sadness and a lot of conflict going on, obviously. So my little story about the city, not too much. And would I go back? If anyone's wondering, like, was I repelled or anything like that? No, I wasn't repelled by it. I think I know what I get when I go to a place like that. So yeah, just a little bit there in case anyone was wondering what it's like from a first time or first hand account from somebody. So now on to the main topic of the show, and that would be neoteny. You may be asking yourself, what does this word mean? Well, it's a term that's typically used in zoology, but I think it's applicable to humans as well. The retention of juvenile features in the adult animal. And this doesn't necessarily mean juvenile features from a physiological or a physiognomy perspective or a physical perspective. This could mean more from an emotional perspective. That's kind of how I'm looking to refer to it and looking to go about speaking about it from that perspective. And in Germanic New Medicine, there's a word for this. They call it a maturity stop. I guess modern medicine might not really even have a phrase for it, although there is something called a Peter Pan complex. Maybe some of you are familiar with that, although it can be directed at both sexes. Of course, Peter Pan is a male, but there is something called the Peter Pan complex, which also kind of plays into this, but this is also not recognized by any type of Zog allopathic conventional medical text. And it really doesn't matter, because whatever they do when they give you an idea of something, they give you some symptoms and they say, okay, you have X and that's the diagnosis. That's just their name for it. It doesn't necessarily mean you have it. If you believe you have it, sure, right? But nevertheless, you don't have to have the quote syndrome to have the symptoms to be affected by it. So of course we live in this world which very much values youth. That's very clear. And it's very odd how they value youth. They almost want children to grow up too quickly. And we see this of course with the TS agenda, the transsexual agenda. And then we also see it with this kind of arrested development or forever young that they have pushed at the adults, especially with the whole plastic surgery industry. Just think of something like labioplasty, which is a plastic surgery that's designed for women who want to make their yoni look more like a child. That's a perfect example of, I think, neoteny, and not from the zoological perspective of an animal retaining juvenile features. This is us in a maturity stop, and we're wanting to emulate neoteny, which of course feeds into this pedophilia culture. It all feeds into it, right? If we have this culture of eternal youth, obviously something like pedophilia is going to be promoted. And does that mean that we should let ourselves go and become aged and all that? Obviously not. But part of living in this perpetual youth is not accepting the satanama, the iterations of life, whether we like it or not. It's also indicative of the dominator style model of society where it tries to force against nature, as opposed to the partnership model, which dances with nature. So very big difference there, how that works. So I want to read this little post that I made on the Vedic channel a couple of weeks ago. It's about transsexualism. And you may ask yourself, what does transsexualism have to do with neoteny? It has quite a bit to do with it. There's a total link to it. And just that link doesn't necessarily mean that someone has to act on the transsexualism in regards to taking any of Zog's blockers, you know, the puberty blockers that cause problems, or to have Dr. Z cut you down there or up there. It's more about a mindset. So keep that in mind the whole time that this show is going, that neoteny, I'm speaking about it from an emotional perspective, not necessarily a physical one, because people are becoming more senescent as time goes on, which is something also very interesting to think about. We live in this perpetual culture of youth. Transsexualism is the end game of this because it feeds into pedophilia, which is really the end game of the neotenous culture. It also feeds into the black cubism of staying same, right? But there's a transsexual slant on all of this. And even if someone isn't interested in this, if we're not living in our natural role, whether we're male or female, we're really performing some type of transsexual light. And this is not to blame anybody who's doing this. I think we're all doing it to an extent. And I think in some way, trauma, of course, disassociation, trauma, you know, huge thing. Trauma is transsexualizing. And what I mean by that is that when someone's been traumatized, disassociation happens. They disassociate from the body and the mind. I mean, Xdianity to a T right here, right? So something like trauma, which is so disembodying and so separate, leads to a transsexualizing of the mind. In certain instances, depending on what happened that shocked us, we can actually start seeing the world from the perspective of the opposite sex. So as we can see, trauma is transsexualizing. Even if we never go to Dr. Z, never take Lupron, never get any of these mutilating surgeries that they use euphemisms for. I don't use euphemisms because there's no purpose to that. That just kind of, you know, fluffs up and sugarcoats what's going on. But even if no one gets to that stage, we are still in this neotenous culture, which doesn't value wisdom, especially crone wisdom. We're all prone to this transsexualization, which is really just a disembodiment from being out of sync. So here's a little bit about transsexualism, this piece that I wrote for the Vedic channel. The goal of transsexualism is female erasure and male obsolescence. The longer one remains in their inverted role, the propensity to become extinct spiritually increases exponentially. In fact, living out of sync is a form of transsexualism light, whether you are cognizant of it or not. Transsexualism is the end game stage of Talmudiarchy. To anyone who cares about the future of the Aryan race, of humanity, and of the flora and the fauna, will heed the call and return to their natural role. Women, it is of utmost importance that we return to our physiological, natural philosophy role as the spiritual authorities on Earth. Men, it is of utmost importance that you return to your physiological, natural philosophy role as physical authorities on Earth. It takes ancestral vril on behalf of both of the sexes to rise up and create change. Whining about the Oy Veys and their lies isn't worth shit if we don't honor our innate biological capacities. The time is now. Seize the moment to become who you have always been. So, of course, easier said than done, especially when many of us, I'm sure, have had many conflicts and shocks in our life that have led us to see things through the lens of the opposite sex. That's why they're able to sell this agenda with all of its bloody trimmings so easily now, because people are more disassociated than they ever have been before. And there's many things out there to disassociate us, of course. There's so many different things. And I think a major part of it is the internet, of course, but I think a major part of it is how youngsters are getting access to things like pornography at a very young age. This is frightening, especially since I think of in my time, this wasn't something that youngsters were getting a hold of in that regard. It was VHS. It was maybe a magazine. And of course, seeing something in a magazine is a lot less intense if you're completely new to it than seeing actual video. So there's actually a creepy correlation between gaming and pornography. And of course, both of those would be habits of neoteny or arrested development. Of course, the earlier one is exposed to these things, the more their brain is likely to be altered by these things too. So that's something to remember. And oftentimes this is terrible, but youngsters will see gaming and then they'll be somehow linked or redirected to pornography. So there's a huge link there. And of course, the earlier someone gets exposed to that, that could essentially be pedophilia, or they could go on to engage in pedophilia with somebody else. So this is a very serious problem. And at the same time, we have this other culture running that's showing how youth this, youth that, while we have this undercurrent of, I guess, basically every agenda out there trying to disembody and poison the youth so they'll fall into this neotenous culture and probably never know any difference of it, right? And remember that the idea that they're trying to promote all this pedophilia stuff is indication of a really, really deep inversion. It's an indication of the end game of these inversions. It's the worst thing in the world. So obviously we'd have to be near the end game if something like this is being promoted. Crazy thing is that a lot of people are promoting it in one way or another, whether they know it or not. And part of the way it is promoted is by corrupting youngsters and by infantilizing adults. Because if adults are emotional children, and maybe some of you listening have experience with growing up with a parent that wasn't emotionally there, that was maybe narcissistic, alcoholic, mentally ill, constellated, as we would say in Germanic New Medicine, maybe a combination of all of those things, and you had to kind of raise yourself, or maybe you had to raise them even more so, right? That's a tough one for a youngster, which of course could create a conflict, which may make them think that, you know, nowadays when we have all these options in parentheses available, the child will think something like transsexualism, or shall I say mutilation and castration, is an answer to feeling this way, is an answer to their conflict. And when a child grows up and they have to be the parent's parent and their own parent at the same time, there's a word for that. It's called emotional incest. And it's quite possible that if a child grows up in that framework, and maybe they're being sexually abused too, who's ever going to know and who's ever going to care if the children are, or if the adults are rather infantilized and the children have been corrupted? And the adult's infantilization has played a key role in the children's corruption. And of course, not to make a distinguishment that emotional incest, I know it's a very, very icky word or, you know, phrase. It doesn't involve sexual abuse. It involves emotional abuse, and it involves putting a child in the role of an adult. It's called parentification sometimes. But that can all lead to a maturity stop. That can lead to neoteny. That can lead to disembodiment. That can lead to feeling like you're in the body of the opposite sex. So we see how all of these things that are major themes in the modern culture really work its way into poisoning and de-virilifying the youth, which of course is one of Big Z's goals, right? And just think of the gaming culture on its own. And there's some crazy stuff that I found out about this. I was shocked. I don't have anything to do with that. I had, you know, Nintendo when I was a youngster many years ago, but this is a, you know, that was a long, long time. And then I had a Nintendo DS where I played kind of those games that were more kind of brain games than the action games. But I think these action games are really very dangerous, that they cause a lot of problems. And I think also it can desensitize people, especially youth. It can desensitize them to death. I think of a game like Grand Theft Auto, where you're actually allowed to, like, I think when you're driving the car around, to pick up like a dildo and then like beat prostitutes with it. So we can see how there's pornification weaved into these games, right? Whether it's supposed to be strictly porn or not, but everything in this culture, if you really take a pullback and you look at all of it, it's not just sex which has been pornified. See, we're so inculcated in this that we think that porn is a normal part of being interested in sex and being horny. Like, oh yeah, of course he or she watches pornography. You know, they like to have sex. And that's not how it goes. That's how deep this agenda is, that we think that that's normal. And of course, it's not normal. Sex really shouldn't be performative. If you're performing during sex, then that's pornography, essentially. And isn't it weird to get aroused by two people having sex that are probably only having sex because of money, not because they're actually turned on by each other? Maybe they love each other. It's all very weird. But a lot of this distortion happens with the first weirdness of the gaming and how that basically sets the scene for ruining a generation. Even an article here from Communist News Network goes on talking about the demise of guys, how video games and pornography are ruining a generation. And is this only a male problem? No, it's not. It's predominantly a male problem, sure. It does affect some women. The pornography affects some women too. But this is a big problem with a lot of people. These addictions actually go hand in hand. They're both, quote, arousal addictions, where the attraction is to novelty. And so much of the outside world is so mundane. I mean, just walk by and look at all the architecture. It's so cold. It's so angular. It lacks so much body. That's enough to make you want to have an arousal addiction because you want some novelty. You want something that excites you. And of course, sameness becomes habituated. Newness heightens excitement. And that's how it works. And it's the same way as in a traditional drug arousal. People want more of something, right? So this just becomes you have to play more, look at more. With pornography, you have to push the envelope and look at, you know, more crazy stuff, you know. And the crazy thing with pornography is that the more you look at these crazy images to kind of have this, like, mind-bending orgasm, the more you're apt to suffer from erectile dysfunction when you're just, you know, not looking at these hardcore images because you've had all your dopamine stolen. And this all works into the infantilization, because I think when people aren't having their neurotransmitters or hormones working like they really should, you can abuse people like this really, really easily. I would gather to say probably everybody who got the vaccination had some form of neoteny, right? Of course, you know, we've all been emotionally abused, just some of us a bit more than others. So this gaming thing really sets the scene. Of course, you know, many of us who were 80s kids, maybe you're a Gen Xer or an older millennial, it was a bit different with the gaming. These gamings for the younger ones, really, it's more of their generation thing. Actually, I even take that back and say, this is more of a millennial thing overall than a Gen X thing. Like, I think of the generations of yore, and the drugs of choice were, you know, things that were tangible. You got drunk, you got high, you went out and you had actual sex. Now the drugs of the younger generations are all these things that you don't really have to leave your house for. Porn, gaming, you know, it's weird how that changes over time. But yeah, this is a big problem. This thing and how they work together with the gaming and the pornography. And there's even porn that's making its way into games. This is so bizarre. And they're both considered escapism. And a big facet of neoteny is escapism. It is escaping because the culture, because the society is so shitty, so mundane, so fucked up, so dark in so many ways, you know, more ways than one, that escaping online makes perfect sense. I mean, I kind of understand why it's appealing, especially to the younger ones, but it's harder to fathom it, at least for myself, to be completely inculcated into something like gaming or pornography. But I guess when there's a lot of just, I don't know, I guess these generations just have a different thing with tech. They grew up with it more. But yeah, there's this crazy game. Speaking of how this all works together with everything I've been talking about thus far, where I was shocked when I read this. There was this game This is illustrates to you the correlation or the juxtaposition with pornography and video gaming. There was a game that, let's see here. Okay, so there's an advent of something called the porn video game. And this is where players take an active role in the plot with explicit content they're viewing, perfectly intermingling the already connected addictions. So you can see right there how that works together and how that would be really appealing maybe to someone who never had sex, maybe to someone who had very awkward or traumatizing sexual experiences. While some of these games show consensual sexual intercourse, many do not. So we go into this realm again of essentially rape. For example, Rape Lay, produced in Japan, is a game where the player plays as, get a load of this, a disembodied penis to simulate rape of a woman and her child daughters over and over again. There was a massive outcry against the game when it was released, ultimately causing Amazon to stop selling it, but not before millions and millions of people purchased the game. And you also get, like, I think, a coin, or like you get, that's another thing about these mediums, you get positive reinforcement by getting a good score or getting a token. So I think you were being rewarded while you were doing this heinous act. But we can see how all this keeps us in neoteny, and essentially neoteny and arrested development and all that. I think it really keeps us from embodying our full form and being fully aware. And it's not to say that children shouldn't have a time to be children. Of course, I'm defending that and thinking that's a very good thing. But when a child is a child, that's not neoteny. That's a child being able to be a child. But instead, we have this culture where adults are neotenous, adults are emotionally, their EQ, their emotional intelligence is just not there. And then the children end up with one of these adults as a parent. The children are emotionally incested because the adult is a child, essentially emotionally. And then the child grows up never having a childhood. And then they're told to stay small their entire life through the neotenous culture. And of course, having the maturity stop, like we talked about in Germanic New Medicine already, I think I've mentioned it a few times today during this show. This maturity stop creates what GNM refers to as a constellation. A constellation is when both sides of the brain have two conflicts and they become constellated. So in certain instances, someone will have a sexual conflict and then they'll have a territorial conflict, or maybe two sexual conflicts or two territorial conflicts, depending on themselves, depending on how it registers. With GNM, it's determined by your sex. It's determined by your biological handedness, which may not be the hand you write with. Keep that in mind. And it's also determined by your hormonal status. And that will create the constellation. And we see this a lot, and we see it being promoted, right? So many examples of neoteny we could discuss. There's gaming. There's pornography. There's junk food, and it being okay to eat junk food and do all that mukbang stuff when people get like a load of like the nastiest takeaway and then like make a video and feast on it. That's part of infantilism. There's also a decadence with infantilism, internet addiction, infantilism, alcoholism, drugs, things like that. Not being able to plan things or, you know, figure out how to eat balanced meals. That's a form of infantilism. Incel culture is infantilism. Plastic surgery is infantilism. Veganism, Xtianity, or essentially any belief system that's against nature is infantilism, right? Because nature promotes the satanama. It promotes the eternal spiral, the cycle. It doesn't try to fit us all into black cubism and stop something. Fear of commitment, neoteny. Binging on Netflix, neoteny. I saw today that Facebook was advertising all the shows you could be binging if you were on Facebook. And I'm thinking, this is just part of the lexicon. It's good to binge. It's good to watch garbage. It's, remember during Weird AI, you're a hero if you're lounging on the couch, eating takeaway, wearing sweatpants. That was all neoteny. Obsession with youth is neoteny, of course. Pedophilia, transsexualism, quote, sex work, I think, is a form of neoteny as well. Of course, that's not really a thing. There's no such thing as sex work. Either you're selling yourself or you're having sex because you enjoy it. Hopefully you love the person. But yeah, sex work is in quotes, but that's another part of neoteny, because chances are, I would venture to say that everybody who's doing that is probably constellated, probably has at least two conflicts. If they weren't outright abused or molested, they had something happen at a young age that produced a sexual conflict. I should also say that not every sexual conflict is because of sexual abuse. We might just think, oh, okay, that's what leads to it. That's one of the reasons, sure. That's a pretty obvious take, but there's other things that could cause that. It could be something like having a really icky doctor's exam, going to the pediatrician, seeing porn could cause a sexual conflict, hearing or seeing your parents have sex, getting caught playing doctor. There are many things that could trigger a sexual conflict that would also involve shame. Just a little bit of an example there, because there's many reasons. It's not just, you know, what you would think it would be. And of course, that's definitely one of the reasons that it would. I would say that all parts of what we call patriarchy or Talmudiarchy, I would argue and say that all of those are aspects of neoteny because they're rooted in inversion, and inversions are made to promote and create things that aren't real, and living in a state of perpetual adolescence isn't real. I mean, they've kind of made it real, especially through the real, you know, R-E-E-L, through the movies, but it's not real. It makes me think of this film that came out, I think it was a few years ago. I think I saw this picture when it came out. It was promoting neoteny. It came out in 2011. The film is called Young Adult. It stars Charlize Theron as basically a neotenous individual who's in perpetual adolescence, divorced, alcoholic. So it's promoted. It's all promoted because if people were normal and grown up, they wouldn't be tolerating the shit that goes on, or they wouldn't be falling for it. Forget the tolerating. Like, I don't even like to use this idea that we're fighting something. Like the whole idea of the eternal struggle. I think that that's the wrong language. I've been thinking about this lately. I think that the language that suits this far better is to talk about what we're creating as opposed to what we are fighting. It's like the whole idea of being pro-Aryan as opposed to anti-Skeksis. Like, I don't want my identity to be based on what I'm against. I want my identity to be based on what I believe in. So that's kind of how I'm thinking about that more these days, as time goes on. Just some thoughts I'm having. But yeah, we can see very clearly that all of this is promoted within good reason. And then I think about a society that, to me, of course, I wasn't there, so what do I really know? But I think of a society like NS Germany. That did not seem like that was a neotenous society to me. That seemed like it was a pretty well-adjusted society where men were men and women were women and they were okay to be in their role. Nowadays, it doesn't seem like many of us are comfortable in our roles, so uncomfortable that when it's voiced in a public forum, like on one of my channels, a lot of people push back because it is so foreign. It's almost like we've been living in so many layers of this inversion sandwich. It almost feels alien when we're confronted with the truth. Think about that. Think about the layers of conditioning and pogroming it would have to take for one to become uncomfortable with the truth. Quite a bit. And it's working, of course. It's still working. Although people are coming out of it little by little if they desire to come out of it. But everything they essentially promote out there is to promote this neoteny because it keeps us in an eternal slumber, right? They want us drinking, eating junk, masturbating, scrolling shit talk, staying informed, playing video games, right? These are all hooks. These are all loops. None of these things will really better your life. And what are things that will better your life? Writing and reading, cooking, meditating, working out. You'll have something to show for yourself when you do these things. But the culture really demands that we put our energy into things that serve them, not us. And essentially, that creates neoteny, because if we're not serving us and we're always serving them, then how are we going to have the energy to grow, right? And of course, they have all these things that they do that will cause the maturity stop, you know, and this, of course, affects multi-generational because they've done this stuff to our parents and grandparents and so on and so forth, and they're getting better at doing it every generation, right? It just seems like that's kind of essentially what they were doing. Yeah, so it's a lot to think about, all this neoteny and how it works. And of course, this seems to be particularly very much a, quote, Western problem, for lack of a better word. A lot of this seems to be a problem that we really do promote infantilization here in the, quote, West. An article even goes on to say that you have cartoon bears pitching toilet paper, a gecko with a British accent selling insurance, a bunny in sunglasses promoting batteries. So we have cartoons on TV. And of course, they've been using cartoon characters for years to sell products to youngsters. That's something that's been going on for a very long time. So we have a society-wide in arrested development going on. And it seems that with this, how we used to have a very strong or firm distinction between a child and adult, especially makes me think of the times in the 50s. And not that the 50s was all sunshine and rainbows and unicorns and cotton candy, because it certainly wasn't. A lot of housewives were on Mommy's Little Helper, and I'm sure many men weren't happy at that time either. But nevertheless, there were more clear-cut roles of the sexes as well as clear-cut roles of age. And one of the aspects of the Talmudic Black Cubism is that we erode not just race, but sex and age. So we have this culture instead, which is in a society-wide arrested development. So when things are not necessarily associated with a certain age, and it can be for everybody, well, then they kind of promote the idea that something like pedophilia is not a problem. And we can see, of course, that it's a huge problem, that it's a sign of sickness and conflict and constellation, and it can keep on repeating itself if we don't get to the root of it. But when we have this overlay onto the Talmudic miasmic culture, that there is no age, there is no race, there is no sex, it's an everything goes type of thing. And that keeps us in a neotenous way because we're unable to grow. If we don't have those biological markers, and no, those aren't just things we identify as. The first thing you are in this world is your race. The second thing you are is your sex. And I guess the third thing you are is your age, which is always changing. These are things that we can't change. So if there's some dude out there in a diaper telling us that he's a three-year-old baby girl, and then if we're not like saying that's true, we're some, you know, of course, according to the Zog stuff, that we're some type of, you know, hateful, bigot, transphobe, etc., ableist, whatever language they want to use, heteronormative, ridiculous. That if we don't acknowledge that fantasy of this individual, that there's something wrong with us. And that just keeps on eroding these ideas, keeps on eroding that we have this sovereignty and autonomy to our race, age, and sex. So that's why they throw these crazy things in our face like that. And something else to consider when I'm thinking about literal infantilism. See, when I'm talking about infantilism, I'm talking about the infantilization of people so they never grow up. I'm not necessarily talking about the paraphilia known as infantilism. Just there I was when I was giving the example of an adult male who thinks he's a baby female, which is, there's so many reasons that's wrong. But I was thinking about it more from just the infantilization of keeping everyone in this neotenous stead, which is what they're exactly doing. They are mainlining infantilism. And they also make it seem that we have to keep busy all the time, which I think also feeds the arrested development, because if we keep busy all the time with the shit that they tell us we have to keep busy with, you know, binge watching, keeping abreast of the news, you know, whatever sludge, you know, doing ridiculous exercises or time-wasting things that they tell us we have to do to be healthy. If we're doing that stuff all the time, we're going to have no time to really grow up and do our own spiritual work. But what I wanted to say is that all of these neotenous habits indicate a loss of contact with reality, especially when someone's engaged in a medium like gaming or pornography or porno gaming, whatever they're doing. That's a fantasy state. And estrogen dominance is associated with that fantasy state. So I think that's one of the many reasons we see more of this estrodysgenic look going on, is because these neotenous habits, which could also be creating conflicts in the brain, which lead to unusual hormonal status. Nevertheless, these addictions, these neotenous trimmings, will put us into this estrogen fantasy state, which will keep us more neotenous. It's interesting how that works. And of course, in a certain other context, other types of estrogen will proliferate at certain points in people's lives when they get older. But that's not necessarily related to fantasy. That just appears to be in proliferation compared to the balance of other hormones, which decline in a different way at a certain stage of life. Right now, we're talking about someone who's losing the contact with reality, sinking into the virtual experience, not being able to tell the difference between what is real and what is not. There is an estrogen dominance that's associated with that fantasy state. So what I'm trying to say is that it may not be that it's just the food, just the Zog fog, just the vaccinations, et cetera, that are causing things like microphallus, gynecomastia, estrogen dominance symptoms in women. It may be because many of the things that we partake in that we consider parts of modern living actually make us lose contact with reality. And then that estrogenic state becomes a fantasy state, but it also raises estrogen. Something to consider as all of this is being kind of weaved together. Yeah, a lot here to think about. I've been thinking about these topics for the last couple of weeks as I kind of planned this show, and the show kind of evolved into something a little bit different as I was planning it, but I found all this information and it just fit together, bringing it all together with the gaming and the pornography, seeing the angle of emotional incest and how this all works together to create this neotenous soup, which, you know, serves the Zio Sludge agenda quite nicely. So I think we'll take our commercial break right now, and then I want to talk a little bit more about these themes. I want to go a little bit more into the gaming and pornography connection, and I also want to talk about the whole idea of being triggered by stuff and how that's an aspect of cultural infantilism and how we're all prone to infantilism in a certain regard. We just have to kind of protect ourselves from that. So I am your host, Tabitha. You are listening to The Cult and Neoteny on White Wellness Radio. We'll be right back after this song.
As a friend, yes, I
And we are back. That was Nirvana, Come As You Are, 1991. And I am your host, Tabitha. You are listening to The Cult of Neoteny on White Wellness Radio. So before the break, we were talking about the many aspects of neotenous culture, infantilistic culture, arrested development, perpetual adolescence, whatever you want to call it, maturity stop, as they call it in Germanic New Medicine. So I wanted to discuss this a bit more. I wanted to talk a little bit more about this relationship between gaming addiction and porn addiction, and how a gaming addiction as a youth can set the scene for a pornography addiction as time goes on. This is a pretty serious problem. Something that I just kind of thought to myself the other day, I was like, I wonder if these two are connected, just because they're both video mediums, they're both very seductive, they both are arousal addictions, and then I just did a wee bit of research and I was like, whoa, they are connected. And of course, people who are doing the gaming consistently report more anxiety, depression, aggression, and lower positive effect and well-being. Of course, displayed increased ADHD symptoms, poor overall cognitive function, and poorer mental health, all things that could keep someone in a neotenous state. An internet-related addiction is not necessarily recognized in the DSM. Who cares anyway, right? We don't have to have something be in there to know that it could be possibly causing harm for somebody. And it has been recognized by the WHO, apparently, the WAC Hebrew oligarch. So more problems could be decreased life satisfaction, loneliness, poor academic achievement, increased aggression, increased depression and anxiety. And the crazy thing is that every hour, 600 youngsters could find something on the internet that is sexual, and they might find it interesting, you know, curiosity, and then 200 of them can go on to become lifetime addicts of pornography. So this is very, very scary, especially when we can think about what they can do with the brain. And I know sometimes it's always focused on the things that we could put into our body, like the literal poisons of vaccination, the literal poisons of allopathic medicine as a whole, the literal poisons of eating, you know, GMO and glyphosate and, you know, CAFO meat. But we have to be smarter than that, and we have to think of these mediums that they're using to control people's minds. Remember, it's not just gaming. It could be the news. It could be Talmud vision. It could even be antisocial media and scrolling, pornography, obvious. So what happens is that a lot of youngsters will start off with gaming, which teaches the brain certain rules about conquest and novelty and things that appeal to the brain. Then they discover something sexual on the internet, which happens random, unfortunately, for a lot of youngsters. And even worse is if an adult shows them sexual material. So let's just say they discover sexual material after the brain has been wired for rules about conquest, novelty, and things that appeal to the brain. Dopamine hits, reinforcement, positive reinforcement, even if it's, you know, coming from a artificial way. So then what happens is after the youngster finds something sexual, they get what is known as a supernormal stimulus, and it actually changes how their brain functions. And this is what leads to 200 of those 600 youngsters becoming habituated to pornography. So it also is to be said that video game addicts showed increased symptoms of problematic internet pornography use. And it's been said that having one of these addictions increases the development of another one. And all of these traits or all these addictions have one thing in common. That is lack of impulse control. That makes me think of Carl Linnaeus. When I hear the word lack of impulse control, I think of Swedish philosopher, and I believe he was a botanist. This man did so many things. Of course, now he would probably be someone who they would say terrible things about. But whenever someone has terrible things said about them in history, we have to realize that, of course, this is most of the time a good person, right? This is like, look what they said about Hitler, for example, right? So this makes me think of Carl Linnaeus when I hear this word about impulse control. And of course, I think of more of the antiquated word for impulse, which would be caprice or capriciousness. And then I think about his five varieties, what he called the Systema Naturae, the five varieties of human species. Notice the word species not race. And it reminds me of his depiction of the Africanus. And he mentions governed by caprice, which of course is impulse. So I've been talking about this for a while and many other shows, but putting it together in a really kind of intense way, weaving the quilt very tightly today, and thinking about how this whole idea of getting youngsters to lack impulse control, to be essentially governed by caprice, is really an agenda, a very, very deep agenda, which of course includes things like twerking and other kind of outward things, you know, booty implants, all of this type of stuff. But it's basically a negrofication of the younger generation, or of everybody in general, but especially if someone's brain is soft, they're innocent, they're young, this is the time when the Dalits or the Talmudicists would want to implement changing and twisting someone's brain, making it respond differently to stimulus, teaching it certain rules about conquest and novelty. Of course, at the same time, while they're teaching this person that just because they have a penis doesn't mean they're a boy and they will be a man and vice versa. So imagine the confusion of a youngster. Then package that in with a very low nutrient diet, possibly a diet very low in protein, because Big Z is, of course, promoting that we get our protein from like bugs and lentils. And factor this all in with a very violent hospital birth and a lifetime of vaccinations, we have the perfect recipe right here for neoteny and lack of impulse control to be governed by caprice. So one of the goals of neoteny, there's many goals of every agenda, obviously, but one of the main goals is to make it so modern humans, especially the younger humans, you know, the 20-somethings and such, and those who are coming up in the world now, that they lack impulse control, that everyone is negroified, whether they are negro or not. And of course, if we have all these games and all these habituations, which keep us in neoteny, which make us lack impulse control, this is perfect for programming these people and abusing them and using them as slaves of the transsexual agenda, which is just the transhumanist agenda, just the Black Cube agenda. It's just everything that's against National Socialism, nature, the Tao. I think we know that by now. So crazy how this all works, but it makes total sense. And they basically hook people through this dopamine arousal. And also, as this is all happening, we have a lot of young people, especially a lot of young men who have an intense fear of intimacy with the opposite sex, who have intense shyness. They don't know how to understand social cues, what we call autism, which of course is a constellation of trauma and conflict. They don't know how to understand social cues or how to talk to someone in person, how to ask somebody out. So not only do these addictions make people all scattered and weird, it also makes them not really be able to interact with humanity. And then things like pornography become a substitute for healthy face-to-face interactions, whether they be social in nature or sexual in nature. This is interesting. Two of the biggest reasons that college students drop out of college is prescription drug abuse and porn addiction. I never would have thought it was that. I would have thought it was like mono or something, or I don't know, mental illness. You know, I wouldn't have thought it was prescription drugs and porn. I guess when I was back at university, those things really weren't problems, I have to say. Of course, I was at university many years ago, but I don't remember either of those things being a problem when I was in college or when I was in high school. And of course, a lot of this isn't just pornography addiction, but it can lead to sex addiction, which can become a huge problem. And of course, there are ways to have help for this if this is something that you've been afflicted with. Or maybe you're afflicted with it now. Establishing new routines and disrupt the old patterns always helps with dopamine repatterning. Trading virtual activities for in-person, which I know is harder for the younger set because they've been so groomed to do those things. Limit your time online. Get rid of applications that invite trouble for you. Focus on rewards of making changes and doing better, as opposed to the rewards of the quick fix reward of, you know, these things. See, it's a lazy thing too. Like, these quick fixes make the brain, make the body, make the spirit, make the soul, make one's sexuality lazy. You know, it's not real anymore. List interactions and events you've missed because of what you've been doing with this habituation and join a support group if that works. Of course, I would mention staying away from some of these support groups, which could just exploit or abuse a person. You have to find, well, I guess, what works for you. But we can see how these very, very stimulating, these high stimuli things can create these addictions in the brain. I mean, more and more young men are dealing with erectile dysfunction. I mean, I used to think years ago that was something that, you know, maybe like a much older man was dealing with because of maybe poor circulation or something. It wasn't because he was beating off fastidiously. They even have Fortnite-themed pornography, one of the top 20 searches on Pornhub 4 years ago and 6 years ago. So all of this grooms people for neoteny. It changes how the brain works. So very, very tricky how that happens. And there's a lot of mediums that change how the brain works, but sometimes we don't think of things like this. We tend to only focus on the literal poisons of medicine, the literal poisons of food, etc. And there's been more and more people who have been playing games as time goes on. Increased impulsivity, poor academic achievement, decreased social competence, loneliness. Possibly all of this could have peaked during the quote lockdown with Weighted AI too. That's possible. So a lot here with this and how it all works together. It's very troubling when we see it kind of all laid out and to know that we're up against so much. But like I said earlier, I truly believe that it's not really a fight. I think it's an uplifting. And is it? And by fight, I don't necessarily mean that it's not perseverance in a spiritual way, because that takes energy. But the idea of seeing it as a fight, the war on the body, you know, all of the war on the terror, you know, as opposed to the war on drugs and all of this, I think we really have to see it in more gentle terms to really comprehend what it is. And I think sometimes the fight seems too much of a struggle for many of us, especially if we're in this neotenous stead. The idea of fighting, it seems hard for many of us. And if we're not in our natural role, women not in their role of natural spiritual authority, and men not in their role of physical authority, and we're addled with neoteny, it can seem really, really difficult to fight. So I think if we change our perception, that will help us sink back into our natural roles. Because all of us who aren't in our natural roles, even if we're not trannies and we think the whole agenda is just absolute top-tier sludge, we are still engaged in some form of transsexual light, which is neoteny if we're not living in our true biological roles. So I've got a little bit more about trigger warnings and how this works with cultural infantilism. This is pretty interesting. And how many times have you seen something on the internet and it said trigger warning? I remember the first time I saw this, I was like, what is this? Who is this for? Right? And I don't really think this is a good thing, to tell you the truth. I mean, it's a new thing. It's something that's new for me. It's something I haven't seen my whole life. Maybe if you're a bit younger, it's something that's already been kind of established for you. But trigger warning. This column contains triggers which may trigger you. Likely a faulty gun. You might read this and go off with a loud bang. And this article argues that trigger warnings are an aspect of cultural infantilism. I would argue to say that is true. And the author goes on to say, we need the trigger warnings because we are no longer able to read, look at, listen to, or be around anything that could set us off. And how true is that? This is because we're all profoundly traumatized in various ways, and virtually anything can hurtle this trauma to the surface. Seriously, are you sure you're going to be okay reading this to the end? And yeah, that's true. And I think we've been Pavlovianly trained to respond to this. And especially a lot of leftists totally fall into this Pavlovian trigger warning, cultural infantilism thing. It's almost like it's part of being a leftist, is like the outrage, the shock, the trigger, and all of this type of stuff. But we've had this thing for a long time, this trigger thing. So they go on talking about some works of literature that now actually have trigger warnings requested by students at the University of California. So F. Scott Fitzgerald's The Great Gatsby, trigger warning for misogyny. Chinua Achebe's Things Fall Apart, racism. Virginia Woolf's Mrs. Dalworthy's Suicide. The Merchant of Venice, anti-Semitism. So they're giving away, like, part of the plot, especially with the one about suicide, right? So this is a big thing that happens, I guess, in the kind of university, or shall I say, university environment. Then there are common trigger warnings, swearing, rape, abuse, name-calling, including the word stupid, drug, needle, suicide, anything that ends with ism, pregnancy, birth, death, blood, sex, vomit, dental trauma, spiders, calories, Nazi paraphernalia, and slimy things. I mean, this really shows that we live in a culture that's not just afraid of age, they're also afraid of death, right? And it kind of goes hand in hand. And then in a culture like this that fears the inevitable, fears age, fears death. I mean, in some ways it's inevitable. There are other ways, maybe there is some type of eternity or some type of, like, you know, reincarnative thing. But they fear these things that, for the sake of this conversation at this philosophical level, seem to be facets of society. Yet, while they fear these things, while they fear age, while they fear all the things that they fear, you know, death, a fake virus, you know, blood, birth, while they're fearing all these natural aspects of life at this level of awareness in society, they're promoting things like pedophilia. They're promoting the idea that you can be a transsexual. They're promoting all of this disembodiment, and they're only promoting that because they're so afraid of actually being alive. They're actually no longer alive. It's pretty crazy how this all kind of works together. But yeah, this whole trigger warning thing is a peak.
It needs to.
Sorry about that. It's some commercial. This is like a peak sign that's, you know, something is out of whack. Just like the whole idea of the safe space, right? This is peak infantilism. Peak infantilism. People can't even hear about these things. I mean, the more you kind of coddle people, the weaker that they'll get, which of course is one of the goals. Big Z wants everyone to be weak, right? Why would they want everyone to be strong and hardy and virile and masculine or feminine? They don't want that. We even have a culture that refers to grown women every single day as girls. That's infantilism right there. How many times have you heard someone say, like, oh, I have trouble meeting a great girl? Like, men will say this, grown men will say this. A girl? What? We see how wrong this is. And some people say this, and I know that they're not meaning to be assholes when they say this shit. They're just completely and totally, it's like, you know, we're born into it. That's what it is. But that's just one idea of a problem. We even have tourist destinations that promote excessiveness, which is essentially infantilism, like Las Vegas, right? Indulgence and freedom from responsibility in the casino environment that conjure up memories of childhood fantasies. Even the whole idea of Disney, being an adult and going to Disney, right? The whole idea of therapy culture. This is another part of it. This is ridiculous. This one sociologist, I don't think he's an Oive. The last name looks Italian. Frank Furedi. There's this thing called therapy culture where it treats adults as vulnerable, weak, and fragile. So basically promoting the idea that adults are neotenous, arrested in development, whilst it implies that their troubles rooted in childhood qualify them for permanent suspension of moral sense. He argues that this absolves grown-ups from actual responsibilities and erodes their trust in their own experience and insight. Oh, he's actually arguing against the therapy culture. I've got it. Okay. So therapy culture is about, he wrote this book called Cultivating Vulnerability in an Uncertain Age. So I honestly think, as I'm going through all this, you're probably getting an idea, perhaps similar that I am thinking right now, is that this neotenous culture, this infantilistic culture, actually creates trauma. And the trauma itself is transsexualizing. The trauma itself is very disembodying, which essentially is what transsexualism is. It's disembodiment, which is what transhumanism is. It's what Black Cubism, Tikkun Olam, whatever you want to call it. It's same shit, it's a different day. So that's one of the main problems. We also have an infantilistic language as well. That's one of the reasons I like to kind of use my own language. If you've noticed over the years, a lot of people don't really speak English. They speak something that many of us know what they're saying, but they don't really speak English. And I see this even in, quote, the movement or the pro-white circles on Tumblegram. I see a lot of people using this ebonical language, like she be like, or I don't even know. I don't speak like this. It's so foreign for me to even do this. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about, you listening. But that in itself is a form of neoteny and a form of infantilism. And if someone can't speak right, then they're going to have this capriciousness, impulsiveness, where they just have to kind of vomit out the language. And it's not going to be right. It's going to sound like Ebonic. So I still see to this day memes on certain supposed pro-white pages saying stuff like she be like. No, definitely not. That's like, come on, you have to show an image of maturity, of something to emulate. Something like that is, you know, bottom of the barrel type of stuff. So yeah, this is just a permeating essence of the entire culture. It isn't just like there's one aspect of society that is infantilistic. It's everything. And even the daily interactions with using a smartphone or antisocial media become so pleasurable because they normalize and gratify infantile dispositions, right? They endorse self-centeredness, what we would call narcissism as someone gets older, inflated exhibitionism. They promote an orientation towards the present, rewarding impulsivity and celebrating constant and instant gratifications. And the part of this article is actually titled High-Tech Pacifiers. I think that's actually an interesting way of speaking about it. It paints it very richly and visually. A lot of these interactions that we have on a regular basis, multiple times a day, do act like a high-tech pacifier. And a lot of these devices, whether we're utilizing them for work or for pleasure, they foster a submissive attitude. So in a way, this could be something else that's transsexualizing us. Maybe this is making men more estrogenic. Maybe this is making women more estrogenic. Who knows? I mean, there's so many facets to it. We can't just say something like vitamin D or lack of vitamin D is the only reason for microphallus. Is it one of the reasons? Yeah, but we can't say it's the whole reason when we have all of these things in society that can cause a maturity stop. And these devices that we utilize on a regular basis, not only do they endorse self-centeredness and inflated exhibitionism, they also use routine and aggressive ways to violate our privacy, spying on us, right? Which is a fundamental thing that deprives us of the adult right. When you're a child, you know, your parents come into your room, they tell you to clean your room or to leave your door open an inch. When you're an adult, you're supposed to be allowed to have some fucking privacy. And these devices don't do it. And especially, they don't, not only do these devices not do it, but if someone's growing up in a kind of enmeshed or emotionally incestuous family, they're not going to get that fundamental adult right. And then the phone itself becomes tacked onto it. So they never get it, right? And this may seem to some people perhaps trivial or amusing, but the infantilistic ethos becomes especially seductive in times of social crises and fear. And we've been living through a time of social crises and fear. Maybe you weren't scared of it. I really never didn't give a shit. It doesn't matter. The entire energy out there for most people is social crisis and fear. And what happens during these times is that people favor simple, easy, and fast natural affinities for certain political solutions over others. So people just want fix, 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 quick, 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 and it's usually not intelligent ones. It's usually just done kind of on the fly. And something else to consider is that the more infantilistic or arrested in development a society gets, the more they're going to be attracted to the polarity. Remember, they say in macrobiotics, the bigger the front, the bigger the back. We have the duality of yin and yang. So what do you think happens in an infantilistic society? They're more attracted to authoritarian rule, which suits Big Z fine, because Zog is all into authoritarianism. Remember, it's not techno-fascism, it's techno-Talmudicism. So basically what happens is our social institutions like Zog, or all the Zogs throughout the world, and our tech devices seem to erode the hallmarks of maturity. Our patience, our empathy, our solidarity, our humility and our commitment to a project greater than oneself. So they erode all these aspects of being a mature adult. And all of those qualities have been traditionally, ancestrally considered essential for both a healthy adulthood and for the proper function of a society. So it's not just like this is it's affecting one person. This is affecting everybody, and every person who's living an infantilistic life is affecting the entire world, the entire everything, because of how they're living. So it's a pretty complex subject when you think about all of these aspects of it and how it just all goes together. We have all the trigger warnings, and we have just a culture that, you know, seeds and deforms the brains of youngsters with video gaming and pornography. And then all of this just becomes escapism because the society itself is just too grotesque, too unsavory. It seems like it's too much of a fight to lift oneself up. So that's why I say don't fight it. Turn your back on the things that are emotionally abusive, right? These things that infantilize you. I mean, anyone who's infantilizing anybody else at the root of it isn't taking that person very seriously. It's obvious that Zog doesn't take anybody seriously, just sees them as a pawn, as a commodity. Remember, we live in an age of commodification. Everything can be commodified. Not even your body can be commodified, or it can, but your virtual body. You could sell your body virtually. So now we have the commodification of not just our flesh, but we have the visual commodification of our flesh. So everything out there is to be sold in this culture of me, me, me. It reminds me of that quote from many years ago. It was like a quote from the 80s or 90s that he or she with the most toys wins. And that makes me think of the 70s being the me generation. So we've had this infantilism trickling in, you know, rising, just like the whole vegan thing, just like the transsexual thing, just like race mixing, just like everything. It's been trickling in for a while. Many of us were pretty young, or not even here yet, born, whilst these things were being kind of formulated within the confines of society. But now we're at this peak moment where we really have to turn our backs on the things that are not just infantilizing us, but are infantilizing the society, because it affects all of us. It's intense to think about all this together as just, you know, one huge thing. So I want to read a little bit more about this maturity stop thing, which is part of Germanic New Medicine. And sometimes when people get habituated to a heavy drug when they're a youngster, that's sometimes people will say like, oh, he or she stopped maturing at 15, because that's the age when they started doing the drug, right? But what led them to do the drug in the first place, right? Sometimes we just say, oh, so-and-so got hooked on this and they've been 15 for 20 years, even though they're 35 now. But what got them hooked in the first place? Was it something called a maturity stop? So in GNM, a maturity stop is when a person is still in the developmental age and experiences a conflict that creates a constellation. So it's when you're at a point in your life where you're still developing, something happens, and you create a conflict that can possibly create a constellation. And a constellation, again, is when there is a conflict on both hemispheres of the brain. Of course, that would depend on, like I said earlier, your sex, your biological handedness, and your hormone status. The maturation stops at a time when the second conflict takes place. So let's say you have a first conflict as a youngster where you have a doctor exam that makes you feel very uncomfortable. The doctor touches you in a way that just makes you feel violated, shamed, dirty, etc. Then years go by and you have a sexual experience with someone and it doesn't go as planned. Maybe you feel that you're sexually rejected or something like that. So those are two conflicts. So that's when the constellation would occur, after you have the two conflicts. And that's when the person would basically become constellated and they would be staying at that age. So the maturity stop is only, okay, so what happens is that the maturation stops at the time when the second conflict takes place. The maturity stop, however, is only put on hold Once one of the two conflicts is resolved, the person is no longer in constellation and therefore is able to catch up on development very quickly. The maturity stop allows an individual to resolve the conflict at the emotional age when the second conflict occurred. Yet, if the conflicts are not resolved by about the age of 23, the maturity stop remains and there will always be a discrepancy between the intellectual world of an adult and the emotional world of a child or an adolescent. Pretty scary. With a conflict resolution after the age of 23, the manic depression will cease. The maturity stop, however, stays and becomes part of the adult personality. The purpose of the maturity stop is to protect the individual because instinctively nobody attacks an infant or a child. The maturity stop also serves the purpose to keep the individual out of a territorial complication. Competition. So a little bit there how that works. It also goes on to say that people with baby faces tend to be awarded more compensation in small claims courts than people who have mature faces. So there is something to this and how it relates to society and how other people will view other people who have the maturity stop, right? So the maturity stop explains why, for example, a 12-year-old behaves like an infant that's still in the defiant stage, and why a grown-up woman at the emotional age of 16 will act like a teen, acts like a teenager, and why a 40-year-old man with a maturity stop at 13 is unable to settle down and commit to a marriage, why an emotionally 9-year-old adult requires a guiding hand throughout life, or why some children appear more mature than their parents. And of course, this all relates to the idea of what we were talking about earlier when we talked about emotional incest and when the child actually becomes the parent. So let's read a little bit about emotional incest and then let's start again with the maturity stop because I want to weave this all together. So a little bit about emotional incest. The umbilical cord connecting a newborn destined for emotional incest metaphorically reverses its flow upon birth. Parenting the child whilst abandoning one's childhood is a trauma very few understand. And here's a kind of a textbook definition of what this is. Sometimes it's called covert incest as well as emotional incest. It occurs when a partner or a caregiver relies on a child for support that a romantic partner would typically give, or even maybe a friend of that age. Obviously, you wouldn't put emotional heaviness on a child. It occurs when a parent or caregiver consistently violates the usual boundaries between themselves and the child. This does not involve sexual abuse. It is less noticeable and more difficult to identify than sexual incest. Emotional incest reverses the norms of parenthood, and that means that the child has to prioritize the needs of the adult. The enmeshed closeness results from the adult prioritizing their needs over the child, harming their well-being. So sometimes on the outside, people will say, oh, what a close family, what a great family. But that closeness is really not intimate closeness, it's enmeshment, and it results from the adult prioritizing their needs over the child, which of course harms the child's well-being, which would of course become a conflict for a child and lead to a maturity stop. And of course, the adult who is doing the emotional incesting is already in the maturity stop. So we talked a little bit about that, how children sometimes appear more mature than their parents. Here we find the adult who is still living with his parents, the man who has an infantile bond with his mother, the quote, old hippies that never came out of the 60s, a time loaded with territorial conflicts and sexual conflicts, or the young woman who is attracted to men older than her age. What is known in psychology as a father complex is the context of GNM, a maturity stop, linked to a father-related conflict, such as a sexual conflict involving the father or an elderly man, and the loss of a father at an early age, a territorial loss conflict. Dr. Hammer says, the phenomenon of a maturity stop has existed all along. However, in our days, not least because of early sexualization, the frequency of consolation among teenagers between 11 and 14 has increased significantly. Most conflicts occur during that period. And that's a very tender time, 11 to 14. For many girls, this is when they start menarche, you know, the when they have their period for the first time. A lot of things are going on in one's body between 11 or 14. Try to think back to how you felt when you were that age. It's a very, very tender time. The more intense the constellation, the more obvious is the immature conduct. Setting on a conflict track, and a track is when a conflict is not resolved and you keep on playing it out. This could happen for years. A conflict track can trigger a sudden display of childish behavior like pouting, throwing a tantrum, or seeking comfort with a stuffed animal. So in a way, this kind of explains even the infantilistic kind of like baby fetish. Those people probably have a maturity stop, right? The encounter with an abuser from childhood associated with sexual conflict, a scare-fright conflict, or a territorial fear conflict can prompt an instant regression into infancy. Those people become emotionally stunted and they're underdeveloped, even if they're adults. The age of the maturity stop is the age when the second conflict occurred. Might show in a person's facial features, like the baby face, their stature, their voice, their way of talking or laughing, their choice of clothing, or his or her interests and profession. Let's say someone who works in pediatrics, does children and youth work, teaching in a nursery or elementary school, writing children's books, puppeteering, etc. People with a maturity stop are naturally attracted to those of their, quote, age. And we don't mean that literally. We mean the age that that person was when the maturity stop occurred for the second conflict. So they may be 30, but they're really 12. And then they talk about some people in history. It was the Scottish author J.M. Barrie, living between 1860 and 1937. He created Peter Pan, the boy who would never grow up to be a man. And then we talked a little bit about that earlier in the broadcast. We were talking about the Peter Pan complex, which is typically associated with a male, but it could also be associated with a woman. It's known in Latin as puer aeternus, for eternal boy, and for female, it's puella aeterna, sometimes shortened to puer or puella. And in mythology, is a child god who is forever young. In the analytical psychology of Carl Gustav Jung, the term is used to describe an older person whose emotional life has remained at an adolescent level, also known as the Peter Pan syndrome, which is more of a pop psychology label. In Jung's conception, the puer typically leads a provisional life due to the fear of being caught in a situation from which it might not be able to escape. He or she covets independence and freedom, opposes boundaries and limits, and tends to find any restriction intolerable. So that would definitely be congruent with a maturity stop. And I think one person who kind of embodies this as the ultimate Peter Pan would be someone like Michael Jackson. And he had his Neverland Ranch. That whole thing was very much like that. Water balloon fights. And I wonder sometimes with him how he had that whole scandal years ago that he was a pedophile. I really wonder if that wasn't true and he himself was the victim of pedophilia and they gaslighted and emotionally abused him. And maybe that conflict or that shock led to him, you know, years later dying rather prematurely. That would be something in line with what Zog would do. And of course, he would have this Peter Pan thing because he was worked like an adult when he was a child, and he probably didn't want to grow up, right? Because he was told to be an adult when he was a youngster. I think it says here his father had a belt in his hand when he practiced, and if he missed a step, he was so scared what would happen. So something like that could cause a scare-fright conflict. So there's a lot here with this maturity stop thing. And of course, it manifests differently for male or female. Like we said earlier, your biological handedness. If you are a righty, you may not be a righty in GNM. If you're a lefty, you may not be a lefty in GNM. So that varies by that, as well as one sex and one hormone status. So there's a lot here of how this works. Even our physiques, and this is super interesting because I think about this whole TS agenda of transsexualism and, you know, looking at some celebrity and being like, oh, that guy's got narrow shoulders, like that's definitely a woman in drag. Maybe it is. That's fair enough. But maybe there was some type of maturity stop going on with an unresolved conflict that could actually give a man more feminine features, like a pinched waist and fuller hips and narrow shoulders, and it could give women who suffer these conflicts more of a masculine build with broad shoulders and smaller hips. So maybe not every person in Hollywood is a transsexual. I'm sure some of them are, obviously. But maybe not everybody who has some of these features is a transsexual. Maybe it's not because they're drinking, you know, the super hoppy beer and they have elevated estrogen. Maybe they have these issues because they have a conflict. So let's read a little bit about this. This is very interesting, I think, how these conflicts can actually shape the way we look. And the way we all look today is based on our thoughts. That may sound like really like out there and almost like kind of on the psychedelic tip, but it's true. The way that we look is based on our thoughts. Think differently about yourself and you'll begin to look differently. Dr. Hommer made an astounding observation that unresolved conflicts occurred in early life also shape a person's body structure. A right-handed male who experienced a territorial conflict like territorial fear, territorial loss, territorial anger, territorial marking, before the age of 6 develops, due to his elevated estrogen status, sloping shoulders and broad hips like a woman. When a left-handed man has sloping shoulders and broad hips, this reveals that he became constellated before the age of 6 and that he has a maturity stop. Interesting. And for women, a right-handed female who suffered a female conflict, scare fright conflict, sexual conflict, identity conflict, or marking conflict before the age of 6 develops, due to her elevated testosterone status, broad shoulders, a wide back, and small hips like a man. When a left-handed woman has broad shoulders and small hips, this indicates that she became constellated before the age of 6 and that she has a maturity stop. So not everybody probably is TS or transsexual. They may just be constellated and they're living or viewing the world via the perception of the opposite sex because of these conflicts that became constellations, which affected their physique if it's a maturity stop. Very interesting stuff. There's even stuff about how submissiveness actually is because of conflicts and how homosexuality is because of a conflict, especially male homosexuality is because of a conflict. It says that female homosexuality is brought on by a sexual conflict and that male homosexuality is brought on by a territorial conflict. There's a lot here about these things. And it says that someone, a man, could actually experience a territorial loss conflict in utero or on behalf of the mom and actually, you know, be born homosexual. Maturity stop also reveals, this is interesting, why some gay men look boyish even when they get older. Think about that. A lot of homosexual men do have that boyish thing, or they're attracted to that boyish thing in other men. That's a maturity stop, right? It would make sense that if we in our own way are traumatized in a certain way, we may un or subconsciously pick somebody who has the similar traumas to perhaps understand us, right? And there's something called the Casanova constellation, which is the constellation of the male constellation of promiscuity. The female one is called the nympho one. And a promiscuous homosexual would have the Casanova constellation, as well as the maturity stop. So interesting how this all works. And it really blows all of this stuff with, you know, all the sludge with transsexualism and people being this way and this being normal. It really gives a good explanation for how all of that is just sludge. All of it is sludge. But I like how they're able to just slice through it so easily. I mean, the German New Medicine stuff is not the easiest thing to kind of, I guess, grasp all at once, because it's so counter to the way that we see anything, because it's the exact opposite of conventional medicine. I'm still wondering if all of it is legit, because I'm still a little bit skeptical in regards to some of the stuff they say about hormone levels, especially since we have this culture today that's always kind of, especially for women's health, always focusing on estrogen dominance. And then they say in certain conflicts that estrogen either goes lower or goes higher, but that's kind of counter to the idea of estrogen being a quote stress hormone. I think all of it's true and none of it is true kind of all at once, but it definitely gets me thinking because something has to be correct when these two ideas are basically running in opposition to one another. Something has to be correct. And I also think too, on a little bit of a side note, that when people say estrogen dominance, it's really not just that. It's really that hormones aren't getting excreted in a timely fashion because the detox pathways are not open. And then we get an abundance of backup of these hormones. Is it the fact that you're just making and pumping out tons of estrogen? Probably not. It's more the fact that your body can't excrete what you naturally pump out, and that maybe you're taking in foods or lifestyle products or body products or, you know, phthalates and plastics and such in your life. And those are xenoestrogens. So that's a little bit different than natural estrogens and phytoestrogens. And I really don't see a lot of distinction between that. I mean, this is all just things that I've been working on my own, but I think that there is still a couple of holes in every program or every belief out there. So one of my goals, of course, is to take what's real and to make my own whole thing from this, of course, with my perspective. So all of this neoteny stuff, all this maturity stuff, all of this sludge, it all goes into the new thing today, newish, whatever, 10 years of the whole, quote, gender mainstreaming, the TS agenda, the LGBTP2AV+. And this agenda itself, just showing this shit to children can create a constellation, can create a sexual conflict, can create a territorial conflict. So even if the youngster doesn't end up, you know, going to Zog to get chemically castrated or physically castrated, their mind is still being castrated. So this is very important. Even if the child isn't doing the hardcore stuff that Big Z is luring them to do, basically a hormonal lobotomy, it's just bad unto itself that these youngsters are being promoted this information that can cause them a lot of damage. This could lead to a biological conflict if people don't even know, you know, what they are. And of course, you know, the sexualizing children, showing them pornography, all of this can cause all different types of problems. This could actually, even like we were talking before, with the physique getting affected by the conflicts. These conflicts can actually affect the child's physique, where maybe the child looks more like the opposite sex and then thinks that maybe they'll want to be the opposite sex, that they could be the opposite sex. And this article that I'm looking at right here mentions that, where is it? It mentions here that if these girls go through these conflict and become masculinized and get the straight shoulders and basically develop more like a boy, they'll end up having a later onset of menarche or their period. They'll end up kind of, you know, seeing the world as a male, doing more of the quote tomboy things. And this is, of course, exactly what Big Zog wants. It also goes on to say that these girls, when they become women, they will never be able to experience a vaginal orgasm. Maybe that's part of the conflict, because you'd have to feel female to be able to have an internal orgasm, right? The clitoris is more analogous to a phallus or a penis. So that makes sense. So they're setting children up for sexual dysfunction. Just from the ideology becoming a conflict and then a constellation, it gets far worse when the child goes through the medical system, and decides to get chemically castrated or physically castrated. Then they're not going to be having any orgasm whatsoever. I saw some crazy clip a couple of weeks ago. Someone on the street was talking to some retards, and they thought transsexualism was like a good thing and youngsters should be able to mutilate and castrate themselves. And then the person giving the interview was like, do you care that these individuals are grow up to be humans that will never have an orgasm? And the women in the video were like, yeah, it really doesn't matter. Like, that's one of the key facets of being a human. And it's not anything about perversion or sexuality being like dirty and sinful and naughty. We've been taught this is all just a miasmic onlay. It's to sell the idea that sex has to be dirty. It has to be pornified. It has to be performative. That's all fake. And all that LGBTQ plus shit, it comes from porn. They use the word frontal in TS pornography to describe someone's genitals, like a man who's got some hole there. I'm not even going to call it a yoni because it's not a yoni. And then they use that language in the medical community or in the TS language. All of this is related to pornography. It's all looped together. Pornography, pedophilia, misogyny, child abuse. It's all linked together, and it's all flying under the banner of eternal youth, neoteny, all of this stuff. It's a hoax. It's a total and terrible hoax. But anything we've been sold about sex and the culture is a lie. Sex is something that's a creative, expressive experience that is not performative, that you do with someone, hopefully, that you at least have a connection with, and hopefully you love and care about that person, because that makes the lovemaking so much better. But that's what it's about. And if we have that as our strong root, and of course a lot of people, a lot of, you know, moms and dads and families don't have that as the strong root, but that's the root. The root is the two adults who create the family having a healthy sexuality. So it's not just about having sex. That's part of the thing. But it's also about having the healthy sexuality. And not a lot of people who have become parents thus far have healthy sexuality. They've emotionally incested their children. They've exposed them to pornography. They've, you know, gone through the iterations of transsexualism, you know, whether it's the whole medical thing or not. They've promoted these ideas, you know, they've done horrible things like allow their children to get circumcised and vaccinated. So there's a lot of transgressions and conflicts that are going on that would make any person want to say, fuck this, I want to stay a child, right? But of course, that plays into the entire goal of erasing age. And that's the last frontier. Erasing race was number one. They've already succeeded somewhat with that because of miscegenation. Now we have sex on the chopping block. Some people don't even know that there's a such thing as a man or a woman. They're that gone. And up next is going to be age. That's what they're trying to do. Of course, you have a choice to opt out of this. I've opted out. I would always suggest opting out, becoming aware, and then opting out. That's kind of the white wellness way. So let's take a Gandhi at the chat. Okay, we've just got a couple of humans in the chat right here. We've got Pia, we've got Epiphany. I think that's almost all that I have for today. I kind of just did more of a monologue today as opposed to kind of going through a strict and regimented list. And I think that's pretty much all I have today. If anyone has a question who's listening, feel free to drop the question into the chat box and I'll take a gander at it. But I think we've covered so much terrain. We're talking about so many things and how it's affecting not just this generation, but the generations to come and the generations prior and those generations prior, and how we really just have to turn our back on the things out there that are a pollutant. The things out there that aren't real, that aren't rooted in nature, are pollutants. They pollute our soul, and they shouldn't be allowed to flourish. They certainly shouldn't be allowed to flourish around youngsters, because youngsters are so impressionable. That's why they're doing all this LGBTP stuff in the school, because they want youngsters to become disembodied and thus neotenous. So I think I'll close it out here for the broadcast for today. I am your host, Tabitha. You have just listened to The Cult of Neoteny on White Wellness Radio. Be sure to catch all the broadcasts over on White Wellness Radio. Follow me on Telegram, Patreon, all that jazz. And I hope you have an awesome Thursday, whatever you're doing. And happy Halloween weekend to everybody, too. I know it's not Halloween officially until, when is Halloween again? Halloween is Monday officially. Samhain, you know, as we know it in our traditions. But I hope you have a groovy Halloween. I love Halloween, by the way. I know a lot of Axtians are like, oh, Halloween's the work of the devil and all that type of stuff. But I love Halloween. I'm dressing up as a Harlequin clown. That's what I'm doing for Halloween this year. Yeah, my Telegram is banned, Pia. They banned my Telegram, unfortunately. So the Vedic one, I'm not sure if you know that one, but if you look on the White Wellness page, I put the URL for the Vedic one. That's going to be the main one right now. I sent a peel in. I don't know what's going on with it. I haven't really checked. I haven't checked in the last hour or two. I tried contacting them on Telegram. I'm kind of surprised because it's not like it's an offensive channel at all. It's pretty much a positive channel. Sometimes there's some things on there that may be a little unsavory, but it's gentle warning. It's a nurturing and warning type of stuff. It isn't like incendiary or anything like that. Yeah, it is a bummer. So I'll be posting most of the main things on the Vedic channel. I still have the racial science channel. I still have the White Wellness Cooking channel and the White Wellness Chat. But as of now, the White Wellness Chat is going to be the chat for the Vedic channel. So I hope to get the account back. But for now, we'll just do the Vedic one. All right, everybody. I thank you for listening to this show. And I will see everyone soon. I hope everyone's having a great day, whatever they're doing in this world. Okay. Satnam.